Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 590. I'm back again, here to host another week. My name is Skyler, of course, but to join me is our favorite KTM lover, Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going, man?
It's good, man. I'm trying not to freeze to death. It's been cold here in the Midwest, snowy. Seems like every time I have to travel for work, I wind up in a snowstorm. So if I'm heading somewhere, you should head somewhere else.
I believe the term is south. You keep going parallel or north, and it's not helping you at all.
No. Unfortunately, every place that we have to go is either north of us or to the northwest or to the northeast. So I'm forced to be in snowstorms in the winter. What can I say?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's a good time to catch you while you've got nothing else to do but sit inside. We can talk some motorcycle racing.
Oh, you know we're going to talk some motorcycle racing. I can't wait.
Exactly, because finally, folks, not only do we have news and updates from all over the place, but it's testing season. Pre-season is here. Bikes are fired up. They're on tracks, liveries, displays, riders, you name it. It's time to get excited, Jim. Here we go. 2019 has launched.
Yes, it's about time. It's just been far too long. And since we're launching for 2019, how about this? That sounded good.
That was a good, nice, crisp bang right there. What are you drinking today, Jim?
Arizona sweet tea, believe it or not. Just to disappoint everybody that much more.
I've got my crispy flat tap water over here, so yeah, not much more exciting on my end. First and foremost, we want to thank all of you subscribers and donators. I know we haven't really been doing our part in reaching out to you, but just so you know, the love is appreciated. And when we get back to kind of doing more of our regular show, we'll get back to our format and how you guys are used to things and where you could donate and all that. But for now, like the motorcycle season, we are also in preseason. I know it was a bit of a delay from our last show getting information out. We really wanted to sit back and have some stuff to talk about and let these couple of weeks go by because we had World Superbike testing, we've had MotoGP. So we just wanted to sit there and get all that information in before we got on. But that doesn't mean there wasn't any racing. There was this fantastic race called Dakar, wasn't there, Jim?
Yeah, there was. You know, I love Dakar. It's one of the things that gets me going in the beginning of the year. I just think the whole idea of riding a motorcycle for, what is it, 11, 12, 2 weeks, right? So it's like 14 days or something like that is just crazy. Plus, you've got to go and navigate through dunes and everything. And this year was really kind of cool because it was all inside of Peru. So they basically ran down the coast of Peru and then they would run into the dunes and then they'd come back out. So navigation was very key. And there was some great racing going on there. So I just wanted to have a shout out to Ricky Brabac. He's for those of you who don't know, he's American. He rides for Team Honda. He's a Southern California boy. He's won Baja and everything of that nature.
No, I was checking out Dakar too this week, or not this week, this year, the whole 6 weeks of it. But I, dude, one thing I always think, you know, when they moved Dakar to South America, when they took it out of Africa, I was kind of wondering, and it also shows my ignorance to geography, how it would compete as the level of extreme differences in the terrain, right? I was wrong. It might actually be worse than Africa at points in some of this race. Dude, the stuff is gnarly that they have to race through in South America.
Yeah, it is pretty gnarly there. I mean, I thought that same thing too. When they left Africa and they went to South America, I thought, is this really going to be that good? And I knew that they had some high desert in Argentina and Chile, but I didn't realize Peru had so many dunes that were there.
Right.
And that was what amazed me. And so now, you know, you sort of go back to that open oasis kind of thing and you don't know where you're going. And they had some great film. One of these guys, the Heroes of Dakar segment they have where they just got guys with GoPros out there and they're doing it. And there's an Australian team and they're in some truck or buggy and they're just zipping along and you can look out the front of the camera and it's just, it looks flat. It doesn't look like there's anything happening. All of a sudden, boom, the bottom just drops out. And these guys just go falling into a hole about 10 feet. And one guy's like, oh, my back. And I'm like, yeah, that would jar me out pretty bad too.
Dude, who was the guy on the motorcycle where he was zipping through and he kind of, you know, I think he was riding through a dune.
Oh, yeah.
And basically the earth fell out from underneath him on some ridge and he ended up catching about a 30-foot drop there and landed and actually fractured his ankle. And then, of course, as a true dirt biker, got right back up and finished.
He's a lead rider on the Husqvarna team. I can't think of his name right now, but he was in contention for the win until that incident when he broke his ankle. But yeah, no, Brayback was the guy that I was so pulling for because, I mean, he was the first American to actually lead Dakar since, like, Laporte back in 1982. And his bike failed him again on, like, stage 8. And that, you know, that was the thing. This was, like, Brayback's year because the terrain was very much like Southern California. Mm-hmm. It was just his kind of thing, and he was riding so good. I mean, if you watched how Brayback was riding, he had a few mistakes, and everybody was kind of making mistakes this year. I think that because the navigation was so difficult, but he kind of got a little luck on his side. You need that every now and then in racing. Mm-hmm. And then the bad luck struck, and that was what was disappointing. Was like, man, I thought Brayback was going to win. He's going to be the first American to ever win Dakar. You know, you're going to, like, this guy's going to go down in the history books is the greatest American racer ever, right? You know, and it just didn't happen.
I did have one. I think I remember reading a stat somewhere, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this was like KTM's 17th win in a row or something like that.
Yeah, they've dominated since
forever.
I want to say
17 years ago.
I was going to say that they finally got there. They finally started winning races like early part of the 2000s.
Uh huh.
And because they were the last people to win on the big twins that were allowed. And there was an Italian, and he was riding. He had won the race the year before, and he was like one of the last guys who was riding a twin. And that twin got away from him, and he wound up dying as a result of it. And then that's kind of like when they said, all right, the twins are too fast. And they brought everything back to like a 450 class size or 450 size bike to just kind of cut the speed because it's just, you know, too fast. But, mm-hmm. you know, ever since they've been to basically 450s, nobody's beaten KTM, which proves that these guys pretty much know how to build race bikes and race and win things.
Well, let's get on to the news, Jim. I know a lot of you last time we were, you know, you remember me and Derek were talking about Moto America, and we were wondering where a few of the riders were going to be placed. And of course, in true Motopod fashion, as soon as we close up the episode, news started coming out. Jake Gagne, he's coming back to Moto America, and he is going to be in the Superbike class. He'll be riding the BMW S1000R, and that's going to be for the Sheeb Racing Team. Sheeb's been around for a little bit. The BMW, I'm not quite sure. You know, this is probably going to be another learning year with Jake and the team getting electronics. BMWs have been notorious for being hard to set up with the electronics. Absolutely rocket ships in a straight line, but getting it all, the whole package to come together, we'll see what Jake and the Sheeb Racing Team could do. But I'm just glad that Jake has a ride, and we're gonna see him in Moto America. Definitely excited about that.
Yeah, it's good to see him back. I wish he was still on the world stage, but you know, what can you do? You gotta take a ride where you can get a ride, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's the new BMW this year, isn't it? Isn't it like a complete rebuild or complete redesign on those? I can't remember. I thought they were changing.
It could be
made some vast updates or whatever, but you're right, the whole idea is that thing's a missile in a straight line. But really, now where can you really use that missile power in any of the tracks that are in Moto America, right?
I Coda mean, that's about it, or Road America.
Coda and Road America are like the only two places that you could actually have it. Other than that, it's like tight, twisty, always on the side of the tire kind mm-hmm. of thing, because mm-hmm. Barber is nothing more than like a glorified go-kart track. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Barber, but that place is small on a superbike. It is a 600 fun land, but yeah. On a superbike, no. And then the Chip Ganassi place in Pennsylvania, that's there just to the north of Pittsburgh, it's another one. It's like, it's a country club where a bunch of rich guys got together and they want to race their cars around it or whatever. I mean, it's a cool track. It goes uphill, it goes downhill. It's really cool. I want to kind of go this year just to check it out, but It's not a big bore bike class, and shoot, it's not even really a 600 track the way a thing moves around. So,
Bobby Fong, another one that we were wondering about, he announced that he's going to be joining Team Hammer X-Star and the M4 Exhaust Suzuki team to compete on the 600 in the Super Sport class. Now, to me, Jim, this is much like the PJ Jacobson news, where it was like, yeah, it's good to see him back. The 600 class is going to be good. We've got quite a few riders there, but we want to see the guys in the big show, right?
Yeah, I think we do. But, I mean, it's a money thing, right? It's a budgetary thing. There aren't a lot of factory bikes in Moto America for whatever reason. You know, you have basically a couple seats of Yamaha, you have a couple seats of Suzuki, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only factory teams that you have. And I, for the love of all things good about motorcycle racing, Wayne Rainey owns this thing. I can't imagine Wayne Rainey can't walk into Arion and to HRC or, you know, Honda and Tolerance and go, guys, I need a couple of bikes on the grid. What can you do for me?
Mm-hmm.
It's star power name, and we can't get anything. Just shocking to me.
Derek and I touched on that last time when we were talking about the whole electronics debacle. I mean, we had these kind of teams when we had Mean Motorsports and the Broster Chicken, and, you know, what they were putting into the series and getting back from it just didn't make financial sense, especially when we went through the whole Broster Chicken article and how much money they were putting into electronics and everything else, and then Moto America really, really needed to take a step back in what they were allowing teams to run, because, you know, the Magneti Marelli stuff was straight coming off the World Superbikes onto the Yamahas. There's no way anybody else would compete, and they were, you know, Honda couldn't even get it right at the world level when it came to electronics. You know, there was development parts where the Broster Chicken bike was actually more developed than the World Superbike bike. So it was, you know, the rules, they wanted it to be on par with like a World Superbike. Like, hey, come here and jump on your bike. But in reality, it needs to be dialed back quite a bit. If they really want to see a good example of a series that lost its way and got itself back on track,
BSB?
Not necessarily BSB. I was going to look more of our four-wheel brethren, is that the IndyCar series. Here's a series that, you know, back early 2000s split off into IndyCar and Champ
Car.
That
was actually 95. I lived this hell. But yeah, IndyCar's gotten back. It's gotten stronger. The teams are better because all of them are now where you expect them to be, all in one spot. But I still think if Moto America wants to be better, they need to take a harder look at what BSB has done, because that racing's fantastic. And I think it's the rules, because they're more in line with a World Superbike kind of rule, right? Everybody's on a Pirelli, and, you know, everybody's got a very low-end electronic system.
Well, that's where they're different from World Superbike. World Superbike's got crazy electronics still, but yeah, they got that MoTeC system, which is much simpler, and everybody has a lot of experience with it, so the information to mm-hmm. input it is readily available.
That's what you got to have, and you need to be on, you know, if our guys are going to go over, they're going to have to be like on a par with what you're racing over in Europe, at least from an electronic standpoint. From a tire standpoint, I don't know that that is as important, but I think you got to have a comparable bike to it. Maybe they're going to get there. I think they've been kind of moving that way. I just wish it would go faster.
Our privateers is what make up a lot of it. So we just talked about that the factory seats, there's, you know, not many available. And some of these guys do it on their own. For instance, Kyle Wyman. He's going to be bringing Ducati back on his own into Moto America with the Kyle Wyman Racing Panigale V4. Cool to see the bike. Cool to see it out there. See what Kyle puts in it. I really hope he gets some serious backing. I don't know if he's going to get a lot of backing from Ducati Corse proper, but it's nice to see Kyle's doing another season. And it's good to see the Ducati. We're going to hear the rumble out there on the track.
Yeah, Araldo Ferracci, if you are actually listening to this podcast, please help him, because you can save us all. You're like the Obi-Wan Kenobi of Ducati. Please come help us.
So you were talking about BSB a little bit ago. One of their young and upcoming stars, Bradley Ray, he actually, well, I guess it's past tense now, he did get the chance to test the Suzuki at Sepang on the last day. That is, of course, the MotoGP bike I am referring to. When I was looking at a couple of highlight articles when I was blowing by, basically, he kind of said the same thing most people do when they get on the bike. It was, whoa, damn, that's fast and smooth and crazy and powerful, and the electronics, blah, 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 tires, grip, outstanding. You know, what you expect from the best motorcycles in the world. But it's good to see Suzuki is taking their young riders that, you know, and kind of giving them that, like, you know, much like Johnny Ray with Honda, like, hey, you know, come ride our stuff. Thanks for doing all that work. Now, if we can get Yamaha to give Cam Bobby a shot at the bike, that'd be nice.
Yeah, they should. I that befuddles me as to why Yamaha doesn't go down that path. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you need to evaluate the talent that you have in-house. The only way to do it is to put them on the biggest stage with the best riders and just see what they do. At least look at it. I mean, I think no matter what you ride, if you're a champion, I think you should, the factory should look at you, and they should at least from a standpoint of looking at your feedback, because everybody rides different. And if you've had the same two riders riding that bike for years, you may not think differently. You get trapped inside the box, right? And you can't see outside that box for setup and what you want and what a bike needs to be fast. I just think I think a fresh face and any data from a fresh face may not be taken seriously, but you want to at least think about it.
I just want to see him on the bike as a personal thing. He's a cool friend of mine, so why not? The number 69 is going to be retired from MotoGP in tribute to Nicky Hayden. It's good to see that. You know, he is definitely a legend of the sport. Maybe not so much championship-wise, but what he brought to the sport and helping bring it back to America, he will always be remembered for that. And it's nice to see that MotoGP is recognizing that and retiring his number.
Yeah, I think it's a good tribute to Nicky. And they're going to do it at COTA, so that's even better. Mm-hmm. The last number to be retired was, Schwantz's 34. But I don't know if there was any other number retired between Schwantz's 34 and Nicky's 69. That's the part that I don't know, but very few times do these numbers ever get retired. So good. It's a good thing. I like it.
So we've been getting some team launches, Jim. And I think we're going to buzz through this real quick. We're going to play the do you like this livery? Yay or nay? All righty.
Ooh, okay, cool. I like that.
Patronus Yamaha, yay or nay?
I like it. Yay.
Yay here. Repsol Honda.
Nah, it's always the same.
I like how they say, oh, it's a new livery. What'd you do? Move the blue from the bottom to the top?
Well, I think they put Repsol sideways on the bike now, right? Oh, it used to be straight.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't. Who knows?
And I've got a shocker for you, Jim. Are you ready for this? Yes. Can you contain yourself? The Ducati, it's red.
Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought that.
I know.
I thought they would have gone like maybe a crimson. A scarlet, perhaps, but red? Come on. I actually like this one.
Yeah, it's nice.
I love the contrast. Yeah.
It's you don't have the, like last year, I think they had a lot of gray and silver built in the bike. It's very, very much more red this year.
I like the red bike with the black wheels. Mm-hmm. I just think that makes it look super cool. It's just a color pattern that just works for me. So I like it. Although, isn't Australia having some hissy fit about the mission win them or whatever's on the side?
Mission win now. Yeah, the Marlboro sponsorship stuff.
He looks like a Marlboro, kind of like the famous Marlboro tent or whatever.
I think that stems from the Ferraris have it now too in F1, all shared. And because right. They were saying, I think BAR... which is now BAT, British American Tobacco, is now back into F1 as well. And that was the whole thing. Was it the FCC got rid of all the tobacco sponsorship and racing? They didn't want to see it on TV and had to do with all that. But yeah, they're saying like, oh, it's associated with the cereal company. It's like, hey, Australia, like, you love racing, right? This is how we can kind of afford to keep doing it because no one else, not everybody can be Red Bull. So... just chill. It's mission win now.
That's the one thing that I can't figure out is at a high level sport like this is why do we still want to be dependent upon tobacco money? I get it. Tobacco money was easy money to get. Mm. Every team had tobacco sponsorship in the 90s. Okay. That ship has sailed, right? So where, you know, you got to think, to me, I get it. There is the energy drinks, right? Red Bull has a very strong presence. Monster has a strong presence. I think Rockstar was there for a while with Arento and all that. But where's just your, you know, why isn't Coca-Cola sponsoring Ducati? I mean, they're red and white. They're iconic, both of them, right? So they would, it seems like that's a natural fit that just doesn't happen. And I don't understand that. But I'm not the marketing genius at Coke either, so.
No. And I'll let you know in about two and a half, 3 years. I'll graduate with my marketing degree. That's actually what I'm in school for. So I'll let you know if I can jump on that bandwagon and get some of this corrected for you, Jim.
I would appreciate that very much.
All right. So when Team Honda launched, though, we did all notice Lorenzo was still in his soft cast, if you will. Marquez is still recovering from his shoulder surgery. Honda's going to be on a bit of a back foot going into testing, coming out of testing, and starting the year.
Yeah. Yep. So let's talk about Marquez's shoulder for a second, because I thought this was really interesting. They put him under to do the surgery, and it was supposed to be like, 90 minutes. As soon as he went under, his body relaxed and his shoulder just fell out of socket. Mm. So they spent like 4 hours putting that thing back together and fixing all the, like, the tendon and ligament damage that he had in there. So this thing was like way worse than what they thought it was, which makes his championship sort of like that much more impressive, at least in my mind anyway. But then, you know, he wasn't allowed to be on a motorcycle, like, from, like, you know, after the Jerez test in Europe, between now and the Sepang test, he had the surgery. He wasn't allowed on a motorcycle at all, period, end of statement. They, like, let him sit on it, and he acted like a little kid and was making motor sounds. I mean, this kid just wants to race bikes, which I would too if I was him.
I can't remember who it was, but they ordered his bikes to be disassembled so he wouldn't be tempted to ride them.
Yeah, his doctor, yeah, his physio. They had to take the wheels off the bikes so he wouldn't ride.
I'm not surprised.
No, not with him. Not with Marquez. It would not surprise me in the least. It just, it's his MO. It's how he operates. He just wants to do nothing but race motorcycles and race them fast. But yes, having that shoulder surgery, it's going to take him a lot longer to recover. He's really not even going to be 100% when he gets to Qatar.
No, neither will he.
I mean, what? No. And then, you know, now you've got Lorenzo. And it's a scaphoid bone, which I think, if I remember anatomy half-assed correctly, it's the bone, it's the kidney bean-shaped bone underneath your wrist that actually lets you have articulation or provides for articulation. It's notoriously bad to heal, slow to heal, because there's like very little blood flow that actually gets to it. So I guess Lorenzo had a screw put in it to hold it together, which, that's, you know, going to be a little bit there too. I mean, that's gonna have to hurt, you know,
at least left because, hand though.
Well, yeah, but still, think about all the g-force braking that MotoGP bike has. I mean, that's pushing right against where your hand is in the handlebar. And you know, you're just gonna, you know,
this is the same again, injury
these guys are behind
Mickey Hayden had, and they had to like drill holes into the bone to get blood flow. Casey Stoner had the same injury. It's not the easiest one to come back from, but it's definitely one that happens quite often.
Yeah, it does. It just seems to be the weak link in it nowadays, and there's really no way that you can actually work at it and build it up either. No. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a weird thing. And the last thing we need is for Lorenzo to actually be fighting an injury from the very get-go. I mean, Honda's on the back foot, as we said, but, you know, when Lorenzo wasn't quite healed from, what was that, his arm or shoulder that he hurt, and he wound up flicking himself off in Thailand, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, just what you want. You put him back on a motorcycle again, and, you know, you hurt something else or go beyond that. It's just not even close. So, it's going to be tough for Honda to get going here. I mean, even with the testing, just because you've got nobody healthy. I mean, even Cal was walking wounded because he hadn't ridden in like 111 days. So that's insane amount of time to not be on a motorcycle. And he's got a bunch of screws and plates holding his one bone together, which had something like, 16 cracks or 14 cracks or something in it? Jeez. It was broken like 14 places in your ankle.
Shattered. Shattered is the word you're looking for.
Shattered would be the word. Yeah, sure. I would go with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and he's there just limping around the pits, going to, you know, and they actually fitted a thumb brake to his bike because they didn't think he's going to be able to flex his ankle enough to be able to use the brake, which he can, which is a good thing. But I mean, the only person I don't think that's actually hurting is Brattle, right? I think he's the only one who's fit. Like, oh man.
Yeah. But considering that the bike is the reigning world champion and main, you know, constructors champion, they're probably okay to be a little bit behind. It might actually make things more interesting this season.
And I mean, I think it will make it more interesting, but I mean, they've been trying to focus on the engine because they're trying to get a little bit more speed out of it because, you know, just not that long ago, they actually finally decided to make it counter rotate so that you had that. And then they also closed the firing order into more of a big bang configuration, which you've got to really work on your tuning to get that to work so that you're pulling a really nice charge of fuel in and exhausting as much of the pre-burnt charge from the last go around. So, you know, there's a lot of development that has to go into it, which is, you know, that's a lot of stuff where you just need somebody to get on the bike and be going in a straight line. And, well, okay, is it, you know, are we, look at the data, are we accelerating out of the corner faster? Is it easier to ride? You know, it doesn't need a Marquez level kind of guy, but mm-hmm. where they do need the Marquez level kind of guy, and I think even more importantly, where they need Lorenzo is that front tire. The whole front end of that Honda is not liking the soft Michelins, and that is going to be key, is to get them working to where they can run a tire other than the rock hard, hard front.
Yeah, because the tires aren't even really changing this year.
No. Michelin is not changing the construction or the profile of the tires for this year at all. They're changing some compounds. So they are making a compound that's supposed to be between like a medium front and the hard front to see if maybe more people can work with that. That seems to have won a lot of favor with the guys that are in the paddock right now. They seem to like that tire. And they've also changed the compounds on the rear tire so that we saw last year everybody riding in a pack kind of controlling the race, controlling your tire burn. And then the last 5 to 10 laps were just absolute maniac mm-hmm. races that were just crazy, which, you know, I'm all for that, but I'd much rather see them have some kind of a tire that they can push and go the entire race distance on and not have to worry about it. It might stretch the pack out a little bit, but I don't think it will now, because I think all the bikes are way too close together for that to happen now. So we'll see, but you know, that's that.
All right. Let's break up the news a little bit. Let's get a little bit of testing. So, okay. World Superbike hit the track at Jerez, and I don't know if you really want to call any surprises here. I mean, you know, Stefan Bottel was the lone MotoGP test bike out there, and he did go faster than Johnny Ray for a little bit. But yeah, Johnny Ray, ladies and gentlemen, still the fastest guy in World Superbike. Shocker!
I know, but and by a lot too. If you look at the testing times, he had at least 0.2 on lows. But I love that the fact that the Yamaha was right there, and then Haslam looked good on the Kawasaki too. But I mean, it's the best bike, right? So, and Haslam's is no slouch. There's no question about that. No. But I'm hoping that somebody is going to get Johnny Ray a run.
You know who that might be? Surprisingly,
please lay it on me, man.
Alvaro Bautista. He made probably the biggest jump in speed over the 3-day test. He flew up the ranks. He was the third fastest. Granted, he is a second back of Johnny, but everybody was. But yeah, he's taking a bike. If you want to look in comparison, Chaz Davies was back in 12th. Right? Here's a guy that knows the bike, knows the team inside, knows how to work with the team. Obviously, it's a new bike development, but Bautista, the guy has shown, you know, why he was still in MotoGP when he was, even though the results might not have shown what he wanted as far as his talent level, but he's still, in the words of Martin, bloody quick.
Yes. Yeah. I hope that he does. I mean, and we knew Bautista was going to go there for a long time. You know, we knew from like by Sachsenring that's where he was heading. And he's looking like he's going to make good on the fact that he says, you know, I was fast and I just didn't have the equipment to show. Well, now you're in a series where you got to have some pretty good equipment just because of the open regulations of electronics and whatnot that's there. Now, I was wondering about this. Like, I think I read it somewhere. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they give the Kawasaki's back like another 1,000 RPMs or something?
I think there was something. I don't want to. Yeah, that does ring some kind of a bell where they were limited, but then they gave it back because they gave concessions somewhere else. I'm just talking out of the air now. But yeah, they may have made an adjustment to those bikes, and they may make that adjustment back the other way if the season gets off to a Johnny Ray start.
They might. But you know, the other thing that interests me out of the World Superbike is the Yamahas. Mm-hmm. I mean, how are they going to go? Because the MotoGP team has pilfered or pinched or taken their guy with their electronics guy, and his name I lost. I had it there for a moment.
Oh, but no.
Yeah. I have to look that one back up. But everybody knows who it is, and everybody knows who I'm talking about. It was Michael something, I thought. But that's going to be interesting to see if that you know, their good run of races that they did have was down to this guy being their electronics guru, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, now in MotoGP testing, Yamaha looks
better,
respectable, right? You know, I think that's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and a lot of it's probably down to recovering a lot of the electronics. Well, now maybe the World Superbike team is going to look like crap now. You know, it just don't know which way it is, but
But they are getting more support from Japan. We saw that last year. They started making their gains. So that's obviously probably going to continue this year, which is a big help. I mean, Alex Lowe's a good. He was right there behind Johnny Ray over the entire test. And then even newcomer Sandro Cortese, you know, that team with he's paired up with Marco Melandri. They were both, you know, top 10 rides. So looking good, you know, out there on the bike. So we'll see when it comes to the Yamahas and where they're at. You know, I just hope that, you know, whether it's Tom Sykes on the BMW, has him even on the same bike, everybody bring it to Johnny Ray. It's really who can take out Johnny Ray. Let's not try to act like we're going to sit there like, who's going to win? It's who's going to beat Johnny. Like, if you can beat Johnny Ray, you can probably win the championship. That's your hurdle.
You know, the other thing that interests me in this, too, is Honda. Mm-hmm. They you know, late in the game, they threw Tenkata under the bus. Ugh. Which
we beat that dead horse on this show.
Yeah, I know, sure. I know. I don't want to go down that path. I just want to go down the idea that it's basically HRC's running the team, mm-hmm. or is at least putting some effort behind it. So I wonder how well the bike's actually going to go. Because, I mean, well, let's face it. You go to Suzuka for the 8 hour, and the Hondas are pretty stout bikes. Yeah. I mean, yes, Yamaha has won the last couple of years, but it isn't like they're like the Honda's like nowhere. So, you know, HRC's got some wizardry stuck in some drawer back there that they just want to pull out and just, you know, dust off and put on there, and it's probably going to make the bike better. But I just don't know how this is going to play out. It's just, I think there's more intriguing stories this year in World Superbike than there has been in a lot of years. I think. You've got hey, here comes the Panigale V4, right? So that's kind of exciting. It's a new bike. What is this the weapon that, you know, Ducati needs to kind of take it to the Kawasaki's? You've got someone who I think is arguably as strong or maybe a little stronger racer than Tom Sykes. I'm not trying to disqualify Tom Sykes as not being very good. I mean, he's a great pole guy. He can win races, but I think Haslam has a little more racecraft, maybe, you know.
If he doesn't hurt himself.
That's his knock right there. So you've got that. You got the story of, like, how the Honda's going to go. You've got the story of, like, well, how are the Yamaha's going to go because they lost their guru on the electronics. And you kind of put that all together. It's kind of almost exciting to see what's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of little different subplot storylines that are in World Superbike other than the big story of, like, oh, what is Johnny Ray going to walk away with every race win? So I want to see it play out. I mean, yeah. I think we'll know a lot more when they go to Phillip Island and test at Phillip Island.
Nah, we shall see. Now, you've got some tech bombs. Lay it on me.
Oh, yes, tech bombs. You know, DG Delinea does not disappoint when it comes to tech bombs, and he threw out a few here. So the first one he had was the FUBAR, the parallel swing arm attachment that actually is supposed to aid in braking for the Ducatis. They had it back on the bikes at the test, although I believe that Petrucci's fastest lap did not have the FUBAR system on there. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting concept to where GG's going. I mean, okay, he went back to if everybody's read Maddox's articles, you kind of know where this all came from. It was back in the, you know, it's been around since like the 30s and stuff when people were looking for different things and different ways to make motorcycles handle and stuff. But it is interesting that GG kind of goes back into that old bag of tricks and pulls it back out again. And what it basically does, it creates a four-link mechanism, a four-bar leverage link mechanism on the bike that essentially, as you brake and you transfer all the way to the front of the motorcycle, this device then transfers that energy that's pulling the shock and pulling the back of the motorcycle up. It reverses that through the linkage and actually pulls on the rear brake caliper and assembly and tries to pull the swing arm back down so that the rear tire stays in contact, which that's really super important in this era of the Michelins because you need the rear tire to help you brake going into a corner. You cannot do all of the braking on the front like you could on the Bridgestone tire. So it's a cool rider's aid that's passive. It'd be interesting to see if the bikes actually race with that on there. That's kind of what I'm looking for. The other tech bomb that he dropped was he brought in what may be, and there's some sort of a system that's attached to the front triple trees of the bike, and a lot of people think that it's sort of a launch control system that's kind of in vogue in motocross and supercross, where they're applying probably some sort of hydraulic fluid or something to stiffen up the rear suspension so that when they launch, all the energy of compressing the rear shock and having wheelies is prevented, and it makes it like a drag car, like a set of wheelie bars for a drag car, where you put that energy back into making the bike grip and go farther forward, and then as you get to the first turn, when you roll off the gas, you hit the brakes, the system disengages and the suspension works again. And if he's done that, you know, it's his Dovizioso, his old, you know, he's a big motocross fiend. He's always at the tracks and he does a lot of that kind of training, and I wonder if he's kind of brought that idea across to say, hey, you know, the start is always critical. I mean, you think about it, there's a lot of racetracks that if you could get out in front of Marquez, you may not be able to, you could have a stand a better chance of keeping Marquez behind you, like Sachsenring. If you can get there to the you get to that first corner first, there's only like one or two places where you're able to actually pass at Sachsenring, and I think Dovizioso is a smart enough rider to cover those spots. So he's going to make Marquez work for it if they can get the whole shot. Jerez is another spot, right? Mm-hmm. You know, these kind of, there's a lot of tracks that are a little smaller, a little tighter, a little twistier that they can use that on, and that's all part of it. So that's kind of another cool little thing that they got going on here. But the other thing that they had was there was also some carbon fiber stiffening inserts that are on the frames of the Ducatis that were missing, or they're being changed where they're being stacked or taken in and out depending on how much flex that they want to get in that frame. And everybody knows Ducati's big weakness is at mid-corner. You have to be able to turn and not abuse the tires in the middle of the corner. And I think Delinha is trying to do it with frame flex. He's trying to flex that frame. He's got sort of the mystery box on the back that probably is a mass damper, which is kind of dampening out that harmonic that'll be in the frame if you make it a little too wiggly and a little too loose. And he's just developing on that. And so, you know, with carbon fiber, it's all about how the fiber's laid up. And, you know, it's super stiff and rigid, but you can now bend flex into that carbon fiber. So if you, you know, usually if you lay it up like at 90 degrees to each other and then 45s to each other, that's a really stiff matrix and you can't really bend it or twist it. But if they're all the fibers are laid in one direction, well, that'll give you, depending on which axis it is, a little bit more flex. So they're kind of playing with those little pieces in there. So it's interesting to me. I love the technical side of it, but these things that GG's brought to the track this year are all things that could easily be copied and put on any of the other bikes. So if Ducati starts winning with the FUBAR system, if they start getting great hole shots because of this hole shot system where they're stiffening the rear end up, look for it to be on a Honda, look for it to be on a Yamaha, look for it to be copied very quickly. So it's some stuff to look at and see what's all there.
We also had at the Sepang test that the standard IMU unit was now compulsory, so we'll see how that's going to play out for this year. And then I saw today that the KTM had a team launch. We kind of knew what the factory bike was going to look like, but we now got to see the Tech 3 bike in its colors. And it kind of reminds me of the Red Bull Junior team in F1, that lighter, almost shimmering blue they have on the bikes.
I like it. I think it looks pretty damn cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're using it, that those bikes to promote the Red Bull Cola, because that's what's on the Formula One team. And it's the same color scheme. It's that blue, silver. It's not really navy. It's it's not a brighter blue. I don't think that's the right way, but it does have a lot of character to it. I think it's going to look cool. I think blue on a motorcycle looks really good. That's just me. And, I like it. I like it a lot.
All right, so we get to the testing and Sepang. This is where things start getting interesting. This is the first test we've seen this year with all the riders on track. Of course, the concession teams such as KTM and Aprilia, they got to get out there a little earlier, a couple days, get some testing in. But let's talk about spots 1 through 4 on the final day. Ducati, 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 but probably not in the order you are expecting.
No, it's kind of shocking to figure out. When you actually see the order, you're kind of like, okay, I didn't expect that, but I could understand the first one. Mm-hmm. The second one, you're going,
no.
What? Really? Really? Yeah. And then the third one, you're like, oh, okay, yeah. But then the fourth one, you're going like, what?
Yeah. Now, so we had Daniel Petrucci setting the fastest lap ever on the track. Of course, it's unofficial because it is testing. We're out there flying, but Daniel said, yeah, there's no points or trophies, so big whoop. I want to see it in a race. But number two, Pecco Bagnaia, rookie. Yeah. This is his, second time on the bike? Mm-hmm. That is impressive. I mean, one, obviously the Ducati is looking like a stout bike as of right now from testing. But for him to go out and beat up on the likes of Jack Miller, who's been on this bike for a couple of years, and then the factory man, Andrea Dovizioso himself, is putting it to him. Man, that is impressive.
Yeah, but take it with a grain of salt.
Oh, for sure.
Because it doesn't mean anything.
But we like to get excited and make assumptions off of one day here. I mean, this is what we do
yes,
every
that's true.
Year.
Yes, you are like the people that I deal with at my work. It's like we measured a part. Is it all good? Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah. It's a large sample size of one. It doesn't mean anything.
But it could. But yeah, it could.
It could. Yes. It's a trend. It's pointing upward. But no, Bagnaia was. Bagnaia, if you really watched how Bagnaia rode on in a Moto 2 bike, you kind of thought that he would definitely fit the Ducati, mm-hmm. because you got to kind of turn it with the rear, right? And that's pretty much how he was riding Moto 2. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, it's if you look at it, Miller, Aussie Dirt Tracker, the back end's moving around, slide and steer it with the throttle, definitely got that mastered too. Dovizioso, I mean, he was working on other things, I think. I don't think Dovi's really trying to set a lap time. I don't think he's trying to go out there and be like, oh, look, hey, I was the fastest guy on this day. I think he wants to get his setup right. I think he wants to get his setup mastered. He's uber methodical. He's like me when I was racing. All I wanted to do was find the best setup for me. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But he's just going to just methodically inch it there closer and closer. And I think Dovi can turn it on when it's actually there.
Oh, yeah. No, he's got plenty.
There's no question about that.
He knows what he's
doing. Totally. It's just a new bike, new things. He's, you know, testing a lot of probably different parts. Why not? If you're going to have consistency in the tires, you can really look at the data and correct it for that particular day. And it was really hot. It was like record hot. I mean, it was 60C on the track.
Well, if you look,
so you can take that and you can.
Yeah, I'll say if you look at the lap at which all these guys set the fastest on, it's always within the first half to first quarter of the laps that they ran. So they set these fast lap times as well.
Yeah. It's all good. It's all good, though, man. I mean, I like it. I think it. But you know, the other on the flip side of that coin is, you know, Marquez can't run a lot of laps because of his shoulder. Mm-hmm. You know, Crutchlow can't run a whole lot of laps because of his foot.
You know,
his ankle.
He had that crash.
Lorenzo wasn't even there.
And when he crashed, he had the wherewithal to put his right foot up in the air so it didn't get banged into anything.
I know.
That's great.
That's like.
He's like, yeah, I burned my shoulder a bit because I had to lay on one side for a while as I was sliding. All right, dude. God.
But it's Crutchlow. What do you expect?
Yep.
I mean, it is perfect, right? You know, I in the whole scheme of all of this, too, I really thought Espargaró, Aleix on the Aprilia, was great at 7th.
Yeah.
I mean, for them to come out, okay, let's take that. That's really going to be probably maybe 9th. Because I think you would have to put Marquez and I think you would have to put Lorenzo on the Hondas above that. So, you know, Honda corrected, it's a 9th, but still that's completely brilliant. I mean, obviously Aprilia has done their homework. Mm-hmm. They've gone through and looked at what they did. They had changed their management structure because now the chief engineer is not running the team anymore. They kind of threw some resources at it. They got an actual team manager who's handling everything else, and so their head engineer is actually doing what he wants to do, mm-hmm. and that's engineer and find solutions. And so they're moving down the right path. So it was great for them. I mean, I don't care if it was a one-lap wonder. It's still far better than where they were last year.
Absolutely.
I mean, you wouldn't be talking about an Aprilia until you got down to, like, 15th.
They took their lumps and they're learning from them, which is good. Another team that definitely needed to do that was Yamaha, and it seems like they're definitely heading in the right direction. Marek Vinales was 5th, and more importantly, had a smile on his face.
Yeah, and everybody in the pit lane thought that Vinales had a great race pace.
Yeah, in the heat, he was fast still.
Yes, and he was fast on used tires.
Yep, which is where...
So which way is it round? Is it did Yamaha add a little bit of crank weight? You know, he's continuing with that chassis setup that basically he had in Thailand where they put a lot of weight to the rear, mm-hmm. i.e. why Ducati's got the FUBAR on the bike, right? Because we're trying to stop it with the rear. And he looked good. And he had that smile, but he had the smile the whole time, mm-hmm. right? All 3 days, he kind of was very even keel, kind of happy, felt like they were making progress. Things were going the way that he wanted it to go.
He led day two.
No mean feat, right? Mm-hmm. Again, so hope springs eternal, right? But the signs are that Yamaha's made an advancement. Mm-hmm. Now, did they make a big enough advancement? Because if you look, Rossi is still just now in the top 10.
Yeah, but Morbidelli beat him too.
Right. Which, I don't know what to think about that.
I'll tell you what it is. Really, it's only one day, Jim. Don't get excited. Come on, back it down.
Oh, now you want to change it. Now you want to cheat before you are like the people I work with. Oh, man, you stink.
It is interesting, right? Within 1 second, all the way down to Alex Rins, who was almost leading on day one, these guys are covered. You know, Alex Rins, mm-hmm. Mark Marquez, Rossi, Taka Nakagami, who... That's going to be one to watch out for the year. Now, the other names, Espargaro's good to see. Nakagami was fast in the last test. He was quick in this test. He's kind of the quiet guy that you stop thinking about, and then he pops up there in the top 10. You're like, oh, Taka's kind of figuring this out. You know, this year, it might all come together for this guy. It's going to be interesting to see.
I would love to see him on a podium. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't begrudge that of him at all. I mean, he's a favored son, right? I mean, he's always a Japanese rider on a Honda or a Yamaha is always going to have that a little more slack, right? I mean, if you're not doing as well as everybody else, you're going to get a few more tries to be better, mm-hmm. you know? That's just how it is, and I'm fine with that. But I get the impression that he's actually really now learning and understanding what it takes to race there. And I think Honda is making a bike that is more rider friendly than it has been in the past few iterations. You know, I think if you look back from maybe the 14, 15, 16 Honda, the only person you could really ride that was Marquez. Mm-hmm. But now I think you see a lot of different names kind of at the top or leading the top of the board on the Hondas. Crutchlow pops in there, Nakagami pops in there, so it's looking better. Even Brattle doesn't look half bad on it.
No,
I mean, in all honesty,
no, he was sitting right in the middle of the pack, the 13 of 26. And then, you know, speaking of, once you get below him, Tito Rabat, you know, not doing too bad there on the Ducati, coming back from his injury, which is good to see. Juan Mir, rookie, 15th, not bad. He's only sitting a couple tenths back behind his teammate. Fabio Quartararo, another rookie, and he's on the bike that's a bit older, but still, you know, looking good. But here's where we have a little bit of an issue, Jim, and I know this is not going to this is going to stick it in your craw right there, but then the KTM, KRL Abraham and KTM. See, Zarco's leading it. These guys had, you know, some extra days of testing, and the bike is still 1.4 seconds off. You know, it's the hardest level in MotoGP, but I really thought KTM would be a bit closer than that. Even at the start of this year, I thought they'd be a little bit closer.
Hey, Skylar, it's one day.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anything.
1.4 seconds, though. That's a big one day.
Yes, that's a big one day. I think a couple of things. I mean, here's what I'm going to take from it, because, you know, everything that I read was that Zarco was not really testing new bits and bobs. Mm-hmm. He was testing his setup and why the way he has to change how to ride. And if you think about the Yamaha, it is very much a, or at least the way Zarco rode it, he rode it as a very corner speedy bike, right? You come in with a lot of corner speed.
Oh, yeah.
You try to make the big arc. You try not to scrub off any speed whatsoever. And that is not how the KTM goes fast. The KTM goes fast like a Honda goes fast. It's come in, guns a-blazing, get it to the mid-corner, square it off, snap it up on the throttle, and get out of the corner and make the straightaway as long as possible. And that's the way Zarco is trying to learn how to ride. Now, I said it when they got done with the first test at Valencia that, you know, maybe Zarco didn't have a 1,000 yards there, but he had his eyes open and had maybe a 750 yards there because he was like, oh, crap, this is not what I was thinking was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And admittedly, that is happening. And again, you had all the other KTM guys like Paul and everybody were chasing different swing arms. They were chasing different configurations and shocks and tires, motor combinations, all that kind of stuff, which when you look at it, if you start throwing too many things at it, you're not going to know what thing actually made it better. And maybe they're losing their way that little tiny bit. I don't know. But I think that they've got to make some decisions, so I think that they needed to throw a lot at it. I do think that Zarco will figure out how to ride the bike, and Zarco will, you know, come. I think Zarco will do a lot better when they get to Qatar. I think he's going to put in some times that are a little bit more in line with where I think that bike can be. That bike is not a – I expect Zarco to be knocking on the top 10 at the Qatari tests, but maybe he won't. And maybe this is one of those things where KTM is now taking it. They've tried and they're trying something that's the wrong way around. And, you know, with only seven, you know, but they don't have the engine rule where they have to have only the seven. Dude, they just, everybody got seven. I get confused on the engine rule.
KTM's got concessions still. They have to
I thought they had concessions still. Like
three
yeah.
times or win a race before his tank. So that's why they have the extra testing days and they get extra engines as well. I think they might get an extra 2 liters of fuel, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. Something like that.
I thought that was back when you were running standard electronics, because you had 20 gallons if you're running your own electronics, but then if you're running the Magneti Marelli, you got 22.
Could be.
Because you can't get it. Something like, it doesn't matter, whatever it is.
Yep.
I hope that KTM is not going backwards. I hope this isn't like a lost season like
Aprilia had,
right? So I hope it's not that way. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of this coin is you're never going to know how good your bike is if you don't have a guy who's riding in the top 10 all the time.
It's true.
So the first thing you got to do is you have to make a bike that's pretty good, that's taking a lot of the riders near the top or consistently kind of knocking on the in the top between 10 to 15 range. And then you got to say, okay, now that I've got that done, I need to find a better rider to figure out how to make the bike go faster. And they did. They found Zarco. Now the next question and all that is, can Zarco help them figure out what they need to change to make the bike go faster? And if he's not got his setup right and confidence in it right, he's not going to be able to push it to figure out where he needs things changed.
I guess we'll find out in Qatar.
Yeah, I think it's just going to take a little bit of time for him to gel with it. And it just isn't there right now. But it will. I mean, it's all new. Yep. And
that's for all these big teams, time right? New. We're going to find out a little bit more when we get a little closer to Qatar. That test is coming up soon.
That's February. Yeah, that's no. Qatar is like February 24th, 5th, 6th. It's like the end of February.
Right. Because I know the World Superbike round. So I guess, like,
well, good grief for what we are in the middle of February right now, aren't we? Good grief.
Yeah, it's coming.
Time flies.
Quick.
Good grief.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, so the Qatar test, I see we got a little bit of Sepang.
And we've got we got another Sepang test, don't we?
Let's see if we get a quick schedule. Let's do the work we should have done before the show, during the show. That's always how I like to keep it, Jim. Unprofessional.
That's just
hell.
How you roll, man.
Exactly. You
That's
know,
just how you roll.
Nobody here is expecting me to be actually good at this by now, right?
No. So I will cover for you. Do you believe the rumor that Lorenzo signed for only 750,000 euros? to ride for Honda.
I don't know, but it did. There's been a rumor for a while that he did sign quite a sweet deal for them. So maybe.
You know, that's the question. I mean, that was what Superbike Planet had. It was like, you know, hey, he had these big cash days from Ducati with Philip Morris writing him a very big check. And when you're financially independent, you may just want to go ride the best bike in the paddock. And so they signed him for a supposedly song. I mean, they had to have. They had to have, because if Honda was going to go World Superbike racing, the money would have to come out of the budget that the MotoGP team has. So you can't have Marquez, who's obviously demanding a serious salary, and Lorenzo, who wants a really big salary. He had, unless it's bonus laden, right?
Could be.
Which is entirely possible. I mean, he might have signed for 700,000 euro base, but
a million, hey, per win, you know?
right. There could be $1 million win bonus. There could be million euro bonus win. Could be like a 5 million bonus if you win a championship, et cetera, et cetera. I do think that they wanted Lorenzo on the bike to win the team's championship. That has eluded Honda in the Marquez era. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that's what they wanted him for. They needed somebody else who could sort of be in the consistently in that top five all the time,
yep,
where Lorenzo should be, right? I mean, Danny should have been, but Danny couldn't come to grips with the Michelins. Okay, well, I had to say that, but he struggled. Let's just be fair about that, right?
Yeah.
He just, with the tires, you just couldn't do it. So you definitely need someone there. And I think if you can make the Honda work on Lorenzo's style, then it works for anybody, right? Yep. I mean, again, you're trying to build the best motorcycle, not the best motorcycle that Marc Marquez can win on.
Yep. So we,
just like Yamaha does. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to lead us into the – I pulled up the testing schedule here, letting in.
Oh, yes.
So we've got Moto2, Moto3. They're going to be testing in Spain on the 20th of February. Then we have the MotoGP Qatar test on the 23rd of this month. Moto2 and Moto3 go back to Qatar. They get a day in on March 1st. And then, of course, March 10th, we kick off the season.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. So
I like that.
I don't know, Jim, you got anything else to cover? We're coming up against that nice hour mark. Get the hell out of here.
No. But I have my flights booked, my hotel, and my tickets for COTA, so
I'm going. Very nice. I will not be out this year. I've got a couple other things I'm taking care of, like honeymoon in Europe, so gotta take care of that.
Ooh.
So that,
did you schedule your European vacation / honeymoon around racing?
No, but
like you
racing
get a
is happening
to go.
While it's there, and should there be an open day, that's because I'm in charge of planning. I don't know if something might happen. I'm just saying. I might get left there, too, if I pull that.
You sneaky little guy, you.
All right, folks. Well, hey, don't forget, you can always reach us at motopod@motopodcast.com. That is an email goes to all of the hosts. More than likely, someone's going to get back to you. Everyone's really good about responding there. You can reach us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/motopod. That's the Motopod fan page. You can like, you know, any articles there. We're always posting stuff. I've been posting a lot of links over there lately, getting a lot of good conversation started over there. That's a great place to jump in. On Twitter, you can find us. Man, the rust is real, Jim. You can find us.
Yeah, so there's a preseason to podcasting too, right?
@moto_pod. That is us on Twitter. And, of course, you can find myself on Twitter. I am @SkylarV28. I'm also on Instagram @SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
Well, Instagram and Twitter @MotoRGV.
Remember, you can catch our other host, Derek. He's on Twitter and Instagram. He's MotoDerekC. Andrew is on Twitter @Andy_Porsche. Of course, oh, man, I'm just bombing out. Yeah, it's been an hour. Time to go. And Dave Neal. Go ahead and bother him. He's @DaveNeal on Twitter and @TheDaveNeal on Instagram. He gets a lot of posts lately up of a chilly but nice-looking English countryside. All right, folks, you know what? I'm running out of not only capacity to talk about motorcycle racing, but I think the hunger is kicking in. So I'm going to get the hell out of here. Jim, it was great to catch up with you again.
Great to catch up with you, too.
We're going to be talking racing real soon, so I'm glad we could knock this rust off, because it's happening, baby. We are less than a month away from turning the green lights on.
But you can't come fast enough.
It really can't. All right, folks, until next time, zoom, zoom.